White Aryan Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network. Your host for today's show is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy. So get a spot of tea, sit down and relax, because it's time for another show on the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network.
Well, it's May the 12th, 2016, right here in the bunker, right here in North Central Indiana. And we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And that's where you send your donations for the radio show and any other project we're working on. Yeah. Then go up to resist.com, our big website. We're always redesigning and adding to it. We've got financial, international financial news, Mideast news, things like that. Things that you're not going to get on right-wing, most right-wing stuff, and you're definitely not going to get it on right-wing racial stuff. Because they're all still talking about the Holocaust. and stuff that's, forget it, you know, it's way back there in the past. It's got nothing to do with what's going on today, unless you were running a crematorium back in the old days. And you're too young for that. And you can always tell this is not a right-wing racial program because we're not yapping about the Constitution all the time. Oh, we got to go back to the Constitution. I get so goddamn tired of hearing that stuff. Look, you can't depend with your life on something written down. Remember that. Always remember that. You can't bet your life on what's written down on a piece of paper. What's on a piece of paper is strictly a piece of paper unless you put it into action. A dollar bill means nothing unless you can spend it and get something for it, right? Well, you know, in the early morning hours, about 5 o'clock, sometimes 4:30, I'll wake up and because of the scheduling, first of all, I'll go to this black radio talk show and listen to that a while. Then I go to some right-wing show, listen to that a while. Then I go to the BBC and listen to that a while. And pretty soon I get a sort of a cross-section of the bullshit of the day. I'm going to tell you a secret that may make you mad, but it's the truth. When I listen to these conservative right-wing shows, they babble on and on about everything from abortion to prayer in schools and all that kind of stuff. And we got to go back to the Constitution. We got to go back to the Constitution. And then I turn over and listen to the radio, or black radio, and they're talking about jobs and, in most cases, about things that people should be talking about, trying to survive. You don't hear them talking about the Constitution. And they were slaves when the Constitution was written. But anyhow, a lot of blacks have common sense. You know, there's a lot of them are totally maniacs, too. But there are a lot of blacks with common sense, and maybe that comes from when they were down there in the jungle and they were facing the lion, you know. And it takes common sense to know when to run and when to cut bait. I mean, you know, there's a lion. Should I run? Should I try to make friends with the lion? Or what should I do? Well, that develops common sense. So there's a lion. Get the fuck out of here. That's common sense. I got to share that with all the white supremacists out there that don't take a lot of black working people for granted, because a lot of them got as much common sense or more than a lot of whites. And that may be a big surprise to you, but it's true. And I'm sticking to it. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And now I can hear it all on the right wing websites now. That Mesca, he's gone Negro. He's pushing the Negro. Well, boys and girls, we're going to go back to the classroom again. I know. You don't like to study, but sometimes you got to study. This, of course, is from our course on Eugenics Manifesto. We're going to go to superstition is not religion. A true religion, like a true science, would help man by enabling him to live in concert with the natural law. A religion of a science that was not true would harm man because it would interfere with his ability to survive. Are fundamentalist religions ethical guides for human survival or dangerous superstitions that will lead to our destructions? Have fundamentalist religions promoted peace and cooperation between Muslims, Jews, and Christians, or did they actually instigate the Inquisition, the Crusades, the 30 Years' War, and because of senseless murder of thousands of innocent children? It is startling for most people to realize, but the fundamentalist religions make no claim that they will preserve the biological existence of the human race. On the contrary, they actually pray for the Day of Judgment, when the majority of the human race will be exterminated. How could a worldview which has caused war, killed and tortured millions of innocent children, and which continues to pray for the extermination of vast majority of the human race possibly be a good basis for a moral system intended to foster cooperation and preserve and strengthen the human race and enable it to control the destiny of the universe? Ironically, a true religion would not have to use force or threats, because a true religion, like a true science, is simply a true description of man's relationship and responsibility to the universe and would help any man who followed it. It would be ridiculous to suggest that you would have to force someone to do something that is in his own benefit. Only a false religion, a superstition, would have to resort to force or threats. You would not have to force people to accept a true religion any more than you would have to force them to drive cars rather than horse-drawn carriages. Paradoxically, the use of force in a religious war is actually an indication of the lack of faith, not an assertion of it. Because if a person truly believed that an all-powerful Holy Ghost was controlling everything, and the fate of the universe was not alterable but by nor dependent upon man, the true believer would never bother to use force, especially if he thought the all-powerful Holy Ghost had ordered him to turn the other cheek. Wars fought over things like fundamentalist religion, which people don't really believe in anyway, are the height and the epitome of human folly. Can you imagine the absurdity of the human race being exterminated in a conflict over something they didn't really believe in anyway? Yeah, I can believe that. If man is responsible for the destiny of man and the universe, then the purpose of human action should be to increase man's knowledge about the power and power over the universe. The purpose of a true religion, like the purpose of a true science, should be to help man understand, adjust, and to manipulate the universe around him for his own benefit. A religion or a science that was not true would be an evil superstition, which would be a danger and a threat to the human race because it would reduce our ability to understand and control the environment and ultimately reduce the probability of human survival itself. Has fundamentalist religion increased the probability of human survival by expanding man's understanding and control over the universe around him, or has it obstructed it? Has fundamentalist religion increased the probability of human survival by expanding man's understanding of and control over the universe around him, or has it obstructed it? An honest examination shows that the history of the fundamentalist religion has been one continued centuries-long Scopes monkey trial. In astronomy, medicine, biology, fundamental religion has been the single greatest obstacle to advancement. Fundamentalist religion is guilty of crimes against humanity because by obstructing the advancement of knowledge and fundamentalist religion, the fundamentalist religion has actually jeopardized the health and well-being and the very survival of the human race. For 1,000 years, doctors were prevented from examining the human body to determine the source and cure of disease because fundamentalist religionists believed that the examination and dissection of the human body was blasphemous. How many millions of innocent people suffered and died in agony because of that? In fact, countless millions of people would still die horrible deaths today, except that some courageous scientists risked their lives and dissected and examined the human body in spite of the threats of fundamental religionists. These courageous scientists thereby found cures for much of the suffering and disease that afflicted the human race. Imagine the irony when sick people today turn to fundamentalist religionists for help. If not for the delays and obstacles put in the way of scientists and doctors in the past by the same fundamentalist religionists, the disease they suffer from might well have been cured centuries ago. Fundamentalist religionists have not merely jeopardized the health, well-being, and the survival of a few individuals, but on the whole human race. Let it be noted that as long as a man is confined to the earth, we are subject, as other life forms are, to the periodic extinctions that have occurred in biological history. This all changed when man landed on the moon because this proved that man has the potential and the ability to colonize other planets and thereby to exist forever independent of the solar system in which he was born. This was the greatest achievement in history of man because for the first time in history, we have the potential of immortality. Even if the earth itself is destroyed, our children may continue to exist forever on another planet. The immorality, the greatest achievement in the history of man, was obstructed and almost prevented by fundamental religionists. Let us never forget the courageous scientists Galileo and Bruno, who made the moon mission possible and thereby gave man the potential of immortality, were respectively tortured and burned alive by the fundamental religionists. Imagine the height of irony when the astronauts read from the Bible when they landed on the moon. The very people who had compiled the knowledge necessary for them to get there had been tortured and burned alive by fundamental religionists because of that very book. If astronauts had died on the mission to the moon, the blame would have been on fundamental religionists for retarding and obstructing the collection of knowledge necessary to make their mission a success. Imagine the ingratitude to Bruno, who gave his very life so the astronauts might live. Remarkably, the astronauts revered the Bible, which would have destroyed them, and which did destroy their savior, Bruno. If they wished to revere those who had truly served mankind, they should worship the astronomer Bruno, the true Messiah, if there ever was one. For in fact, he gave his life to improve the human knowledge, and in fact gave his life to save the lives of the astronauts and to potentially give immortality to all the children of tomorrow. In effect, then, Bruno is a shining example and fitting symbol of all the courageous scientists throughout history who gave their lives in their commitment to giving knowledge, ability, and immortality to all the children of tomorrow. The instance of astronauts reading from the Bible is a prime example of how physical science has advanced while moral science has not. This is precisely the reason we are threatened with nuclear self-destruction today, because our scientific advance gave us power in the physical universe, but our failure to advance in a religious moral sense did not give us the ability to control our actions for our own benefit. This exposes us to terrible dangers. We have the moral understandings of an ignorant savage of 2,000 years ago, but the science and the power of a modern nuclear age. Because of fundamentalist religion, mankind is like a five-year-old child playing with a loaded gun. Today, all the mankind stands figuratively in the same position as the astronauts. The astronauts were in dire jeopardy when they were floating in space, and we are in dire jeopardy in the nuclear dilemma, yet we both revere the Bible, even while its fundamentalist proponents have prayed and worked for our destruction. If the human race is destroyed, the blame will be on fundamentalist religion, which blinds us and prevents us from developing a modern moral system that could save the human race, just as 400 years ago it prevented man from gaining knowledge. And purpose of human action should be to increase man's knowledge about the power of over the universe. The purpose of true religion, like the purpose of true science, should be to help man understand, adjust, and manipulate the universe around him for his own benefit. A religion or a science that was not true would be an evil superstition, which would be a danger and a threat to the human race because it would reduce our ability to understand and control the environment and ultimately reduce the probability of human survival itself. Has fundamentalist religion increased the probability of human survival by expanding man's understanding of and control over the universe around him, or has it obstructed it? An honest examination shows that the history of the fundamentalist religion has been one continued centuries-long Scopes monkey trial. In astronomy, medicine, and biology, fundamentalist religions has been the single greatest obstacle to advancement. Fundamentalist religion is guilty of crimes against humanity because by obstructing the advancement of knowledge, fundamentalist religion has actually jeopardized the health and the well-being and very survival of the human race. For 1,000 years, doctors were prevented from examining the human body to determine the source and cure of disease because fundamentalist religionists believed that the examination and dissection of the human body was blasphemous. Did I read this before? How many millions of innocent people suffered and died in agony because of that? In fact, countless millions of people would still die horrible deaths today, except some courageous scientists risked their lives in dissecting and examining the human body in spite of the threats of fundamentalist religions. These courageous scientists thereby found cures for much of the suffering and disease that afflicted a human race. Imagine the irony when sick people today turn to fundamentalist religionists for help, if not for the delay. I read this before. What the hell's going on here? I think that was a double print. Let us never forget that the courageous scientists Galileo and Bruno, who made the moon mission possible, thereby gave man the potential of immortality, were respectively tortured and burned alive by fundamentalist religion. I think this is a double print here. I should have checked this thing out. I'm going to skip a page and start up over here. It is impossible for man to survive in the world or on a space mission if he bases his beliefs and actions on falsehood. If you can fly to the moon on the basis of biblical Ptolemaic astronomy, you can run the earth by 2,000-year-old morality. An impartial extraterrestrial looking down on this planet would view the continuation of a 2,000-year-old morality in modern society as an absolute extraordinary anachronism. Man's moral system is literally 2,000 years old. Have we learned nothing new in 2,000 years? Imagine what our world would be like today if our knowledge of chemistry, medicine, and physics had stopped advancing 2,000 years ago. Our physical science, which explains the nature of the physical universe around us, continues to advance, but religion, which explains something much, much more important, our own relationship to the universe itself and our relationship and responsibility to one another, stopped advancing 2,000 years ago. What good does it do us to have enough understanding of the physical laws of the universe so that we can stack bricks to make a mile-high skyscraper or go to the moon if we use the same science to destroy ourselves in a nuclear war? A true religion is not superstition any more than darkness is light. A true religion is a tool to help man understand and direct his relationship and responsibility to the universe around him. If we examine our experience in physical science, we find clearly that our first advances in the realm of physical science were merely crudely sharpened stones, axes, and spears. It is hardly surprising that our first moral or religious systems were inefficient in a figurative, metaphorical sense. Our 2,000-year-old moral systems are like crudely sharpened stones. But that does not mean that we should abandon all moral or religious ideas any more than we abandon all tools because of our first axes and spears were inefficient. The attempt of the atheist to destroy religion is ridiculous. Wait a minute. They assume that religion and superstition are synonymous. They're actually opposites. They likewise assume that religion and science are opposites. Actually, religion and science are strikingly similar because they are both attempts, however imperfect, to help man understand the world around him. I disagree. We should not think in terms of destroying false religion, but rather in creating a true one. No. First, we have to destroy the old one. You can't build something, a new house, on top of a bad foundation. That's Tommy's words. Well, that's enough for today on that particular subject. And let me mark my place here, and we will go at it again. But like I say, I don't think you can build a new house based on a bad foundation. And all this other religious stuff is a bad foundation. That's Tommy's opinion. Okay, well, here's an example of religious idiocy. Nadia Elbouga is talking about the long-term scars of female genital mutilation. The women she's treated who cannot enjoy sex, who suffer from medical complications, who may have even forgotten about the painful event that took place when they were as young as 4 or 5. Quote, as a practicing Muslim, it is mutilation that doesn't exist in the religious text, unquote. Elbouga says that an ancient tradition that persists among some, mostly African communities, including some Coptic Christians, quote, it's a way to control female sexuality and it's a false belief, unquote. She adds, calling on male Muslim leaders to take a stand. For some of her listeners, female genital mutilation is a taboo topic, a scourge that affects an estimated 200 million women and girls worldwide, including some 60,000 in France. But no subject seems off limits for this 39-year-old Elbouga, France's rare and perhaps only veiled Muslim sexologist who mixes medical facts with a dose of religious reality. Premature ejaculation, homosexuality, pedophilia, and masturbation are all fair game during Elbouga's radio appearances and in private sessions in her Paris area clinic. If she's a long way from becoming a household name or France's Muslim answer to Dr. Ruth, America's no-nonsense Jewish sex therapist, the midwife and mother of two, is challenging conservative Muslim conventions, not to mention stereotypes about Islam. Well, anyhow, there you go. Sexual mutilation. Of course, they do it to the boys, too, but it's not as severe as to the girls. Well, you want some free land? How about Russia? The Russian state parliament will pass a bill on April 12th, which is already passed, to 2016, which will offer free 1 hectare, about 2.5 acres of land in that country's far eastern federal district to both Russians and non-Russians nationalists wishing to settle the region. Originally, the scheme was limited to Russian nationals only, but the new version of the bill has extended the right to carefully screened non-Russians too. Non-Russians too. How about that? According to a report in the RT News Service, the plots of land will be handed over to Russians and foreigners who want to build homes or start businesses in agricultural or tourism in the region. The Russian Lower House Committee for Real Estate and Construction recommended that the State Duma approve the bill in second reading in the session next week. The Parliament already approved the draft of the first reading on December 18, 2015. According to the 2010 census, the Far Eastern Federal District has a population of 6,293,129. The population has been in decline ever since the collapse of the Soviet Union, dropping by 14% in the last 15 years. The Russian government, aware that unless the European element of the population is rapidly increased, the region will quickly become majority Chinese, has been actively working on repopulation plans since 2010. Smart. Initially, the plan was to attract Russians from those former Soviet Union states which had become independent following the breakup of the USSR. This program met with limited success, and then the program was opened up to resettling refugees and illegal immigrants from the Ukraine. As a result, what are called ethnic Russians and Ukrainians make up the majority of the population. In Russian parlance, ethnic Russian means European. However, the new bill, to be passed next week, contains a clause allowing foreign citizens to apply for land as well. The foreign nationals will be allowed to use the land on lease from the state for a period of 5 years. After 5 years, the foreign nationals will be able to apply for naturalization as Russian citizens and then acquire full property rights to the land that they've been working. The explanations attached to the bill state that the government expects the free land handover to attract more people to the Far East Federal District, to slow and stop outward migration of locals, and to boost the socioeconomic development of the territory. Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev has also ordered the development of a special web service that will allow interested applicants to obtain all necessary papers confirming their property rights remotely and with a minimum of red tape. Russian President Vladimir Putin personally endorsed the idea when it was first mooted in 2015 by Deputy Prime Minister and Presidential Envoy to the Far East Federal District, Yuri Trutnev, who said that such a step would strengthen the tendency of people's migration to the Far East. Trutnev said at the time that Putin called the idea right in principle and noted that similar programs had been successfully implemented in Siberia. Putin urged all responsible officials to be precise and cautious when detailing the conditions of the land ownership. Well, this article goes on for quite a ways, but anyhow, there you go, boys and girls. You want to get out of this silly situation, you might get into another silly situation, I don't know, but there you go. Russia or bust. You know, I think that this irrational, crazy, anti-racism thing that's sweeping the West is something else, because it's turning into the same type of stuff that burnt the witches at the stake. Yeah, that you're possessed by the devil, because there's a connection psychologically between the two causes. Racism becomes such a private internal fear that they're accusing everybody of racism. Over here over in Ireland, they're going crazy. Racially motivated crimes must be treated severely by the courts because they damage community relations and tear the fabric of society apart, a conference in Limerick has heard. You know, this reminds me of the French Revolution, too. Everybody accused everybody of being a bad guy, and they kept chopping off heads so there wasn't any more heads to chop off in the intelligentsia or the leadership. So I think this is going to end badly for the other side because everything is racism. And what it ends up is you see a lot of them now accusing each other. Liberals and conservatives alike accusing each other of being racist. It's becoming hysterical. And it's becoming hysterically. Yeah, right. So you see, you get my point? It's very similar to the old witch hunts of the old days now that they've latched onto this, and it gets worse and worse where almost anything is racism. It's racism. Run for your lives. The racists are coming. Oh, you disagree with me? You must be a racist. Get him. Speaking at the European Network Against Racism, ENAR, seminar exploring Islamophobia in Ireland, Shane O'Curry, ENAR director, said the event was organized to highlight the increased number of racist incidents its reporting system has recorded, in particular against members of the Muslim religion. Yeah. Wow. Of course, there's no reason at all to ever be pissed off at Islam. I mean, what has Islam ever done more bad? I mean, wait a minute. What's it doing bad now? It wants their daughters to have a operation on their vagina, man, all over Europe, you know. I don't see why that would make you dislike them or beheading people. Believe me, just because it's only happening in the Middle East doesn't mean it won't come to Europe. If you get the high enough population of the Islamics, and the radicals always follow right behind, and pretty soon you got the situation that could develop into cutting heads off in Europe. Yeah. Of course, maybe it's good to fuel this fire. Maybe it's good to bring it like a pimple to a head so you can pop it. Well, I guess this is just playback, payback. For all those crusades insane white people used to go down into North Africa, you know, looking for the grave of Jesus and all that kind of stuff. And they went crazy. So I guess this is payback, and we'll have to live through it. Speaking of hate crimes, the FBI is looking into whether the April 29th beating death of Stephen Nelson south of Nampa, I think that's up in, Idaho, qualifies as a hate crime. I guess maybe it was a love crime. Canyon County Sheriff Kieran Donahue, in an interview Tuesday with the Idaho Statesman editorial board, confirmed that the FBI is looking into the possibility that Nelson, 49, was targeted by his killers because he was a homosexual. Wow. Well, we don't know for sure, but we're going to turn over every rock in Idaho to find out. They're going to have to meet some pretty high standards of federal law to make that happen, to get beyond the robbery aspect, Donahue said. Well, if they robbed the guy and murdered the guy, how much more do you need? How much more do you need? Under federal Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Acts of 2009, willfully causing bodily injury based on the victim's race, religion, national origin, sexual orientation, gender or gender identity, or disability is a classified hate crime. Jeez, insane. The statute carries a possible life sentence in cases in a victim is killed. Well, would carry, should carry a life sentence, even if he's, of course, even if he was not homosexual. If you get somebody, murder somebody, usually they're going to get a life sentence. The law is somewhat complicated, U.S. Attorney for Idaho Wendy Olson said. We have to prove that the offense occurred because of the protected status of the victim. Well, I guess you'd have to have see the corpse laying there with a dildo in his mouth, I guess, to know for sure. When an individual is attacked because of their sexual orientation or gender identity, prosecutors must also prove that the crime somehow affected interstate commerce. I've told you before, interstate commerce laws are the most dangerous laws in the country. They have been, interstate commerce laws have been used for almost everything to get people and give them a hard time, which allows a person to be charged under a federal statute. If the perpetrators used a cell phone or a computer with access to the internet in furtherance of their crime, that would qualify too, she said. I wonder if the Indians use smoke signals, whether that would qualify under federal crime, hate crime and legislation. Having the extra element of proving interstate commerce can be a bit cumbersome, Olson said. They're trying to figure that out in the trial of Dennis Mahon, whether he was screwing up interstate commerce, which I can't figure out how in the hell it ever came to that conclusion. Allegedly, he sent an explosive device, but who knows? Having that extra element of proving interstate commerce can be a little bit cumbersome, Olson said. Other existing federal laws allow for federal prosecution of hate crimes directed against minorities and other victims. Except white men. There, yeah, you can do it to white men, man. Two Boise men charged under the Shepard-Byrd Act were acquitted by a jury last year after being accused of beating a black man in the Torch 2 lounge because of his race. Well, how do you know it's not because he lost the pool game? Maybe the guy beat him at pool or something. Oh, well, that's hatred. Everything's hatred. In a 2009 case charged under a different hate crime statute, one man pleaded guilty and two others were found guilty for beating a black man after he came out of the Nampa Walmart. Wow. Investigators are looking into the federal law in Nelson's death because Idaho's malicious harassment statute does not cover violence committed because of the victim's sexual orientation. Well, that's sane because they should only be charged on the crime of doing it rather than adding on all this bullshit. But you know what it is. This is all anti-white male stuff. Yeah. And this all started with Gregory Withrow testifying in California about allegedly being nailed to a cross on the street in Sacramento by my friends, which never happened. He testified before that state committee, and that was when this hate crime thing was just getting started. So it was all based on a lie. The whole law is based on a lie. The widening of the federal law to include victims of sexual orientation came after the deaths of Shepard and Byrd. And the Shepard thing, that was a homosexual crime against a homosexual. University of Wyoming student Shepard, 21, was tortured, beaten to death, and left to die near Laramie, Wyoming. In October 1998, two men pretended they were gay to gain Shepard's trust so they could rob him. Well, I guess they were robbers then, not hate crimers. Yep. Byrd was a black man who was killed in Jasper, Texas in June 1998. Two of the three men who dragged Byrd for 3 miles behind a pickup were white supremacists. One of the killers was executed. One remains on death row, and the third was sentenced to life. Maybe that was interstate commerce because they were driving a pickup truck when they dragged him down the road. In the Lake Powell case, Nelson responded to an ad for a sexual encounter. He wanted a dilly-dee on thebackpage.com and arranged to meet a man and pay him for sex, police said. Police said Kelly B. Schneider, 22, of Nampa, met Nelson and had him drive to a deserted spot in the Goats Point area of Lake Lowell. Schneider, allegedly assisted by Jason C. Woods, 28, also from Nampa, pushed Nelson to the ground and kicked him at least 30 times with steel-toed boots. Oh. I guess if they hadn't have been steel-toed, it would have been all right. Two other men, Kevin R. Tracy, 21, of Nampa, and Daniel A. Hinkle, 23, of Nampa, hid nearby in case they were needed, police said. For one guy? Four guys? All four are charged with first-degree murder. They're scheduled to appear Friday in district court, but it's unclear whether those hearings will take place. In complex cases, the hearings often are rescheduled to allow both sides more time to investigate. Woods told police he had placed an internet ad and that it had been used before to set people up so they could be robbed, according to a probable cause affidavit filed in the case. Investigators are looking into whether only homosexual people were targeted or whether heterosexuals also might have been victimized. But that's not a hate crime. That ain't a hate crime, man. You got to be white and heterosexual to perform a hate crime. Come on. Mark my word, as time goes on, this kind of stuff is going to cause a severe backlash in this country. And then you're going to see a lot more dead people. See here, this town of Nampa up there in Idaho, between January 31st, 2015, and let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, hell, about 20 people have been murdered up there since 2015. I'd move out of that damn town, Nampa, Idaho. If you could drive through there, don't stop. And all those people that got caught got life in prison. So what do you need the hate crime? You know, it's ridiculous. They got a new law down there in Louisiana that attacking a cop is a hate crime. Now what are they going to do when all these black folk, like on these TV shows, attack the cops? Almost invariably, when they get caught and they try to put them down, they struggle with the cops. So anytime you resist a cop, that would be a hate crime. So we're going to see a lot more black folk go to prison for a hate crime, attacking white cops. You think so? I don't know. They'll probably figure a way around that one. Here's another hate crime, vandalism at Waterloo Synagogue, Waterloo, Iowa. The vandals, those poor vandals, they sure get the drug through the mud. They defaced the Sons of Jacob Synagogue in Waterloo Tuesday evening, painting Jesus Saves and two crosses on the building. Ah, hate crime Christians. I told you yesterday about the 11-year-old black boy charged with hate crime for torching a yeshiva bus on fire over there in Brooklyn. Wow. 11-year-old. Got him for a hate crime. Roll out the guillotine, baby. I told you yesterday about this pug dog that's being charged with a hate crime, right? That his master's taught him how to give the Sieg Heil Hitler salute. Yeah. Yep. And also his master was arrested after teaching girlfriend's pug to perform a Nazi salute. Well, there you go. There goes one dog to prison. Here's one. Pair arrested on hate crime charges for dumping a severed cow head at Pennsylvania Bovine Sanctuary. I don't know about that. You'll have to explain that one to me. Well, evidently, Ireland doesn't have hate crime laws, and one of the top legislatures, one of the leaders in Ireland, said, we don't need it. We're too egalitarian already. We don't need hate crime. Here's one from Eastern Oregon. Hermiston. Man faces hate crime charges after beating a man. I guess if he'd have beat a woman, it'd have been all right. A 52-year-old Hermiston man has been arrested on charges of second-degree aggravated assault, second-degree disorderly conduct, and resisting arrest after reportedly assaulting a black male in Pendleton. Vernon Allen Jewell was reportedly yelling racial slurs and being belligerent towards another man on Saturday night. Jewell was spotted swinging at the man while using a racial epithet against him. The assault charged in this case is categorized as a hate crime because of the nature of Jewell's words. He called him an untouchable. You big untouchable bastard, boy. So he hit him. Do you realize how much it costs to keep a guy in prison for any length of time? It costs a hell of a lot of money. They got to break the bank on hate crime prosecution. Now here's a big, real big hate crime, man. Up there in the Northwest, people have been disappearing for a long time, and they suspect a hate criminal, Sasquatch. Sasquatch is performing hate crime against people in the woods. Listen to this.
We understood that the national park system has a large law enforcement presence. Mm-hmm. And law enforcement is known to keeping a lot of data. Missing people, homicides, robbery, etc. Well, so we attempted to get information from them through the use of Freedom of Information Act. And we filed dozens of Freedom of Information Act requests for this data. We got information back that they didn't keep lists of missing people. Locally at Yosemite or at any other national park, and at a national level. And when we requested the data, the national parks came back and stated that they were going to charge us $34,000 for a list of missing people from Yosemite. Wow. And they wanted $1.4 million for a list of missing people nationally. And they stated that they just don't keep that data.
That's kind of shocking because yeah. It would seem to me like it makes sense that a park, a national park of mm-hmm. this size, would be probably the first place where people would go missing. You would need that information. But no, not so much.
I think that they have the information. They don't want the public to know the information at this point. And we work with guys that are heads of large law enforcement departments in the United States. And their statement to me was, these people are not stupid.
Yeah.
They understand the need to keep this information. They just don't want to give it up at this point.
Exactly.
And you said, I was reading in the beginning here, that you actually, this all started just a conversation that you had with a ranger several years back.
Several years ago, about 3.5-4 years ago, a ranger came up to me and said, hey, there's some disappearances at several parks I've worked at. And I think somebody needs to take a hard look at it because when the people disappear, there's a lot of publicity on the front end.
Right.
Soon after they disappear, you don't hear anything. There are some young kids under 10 years old that are missing from national parks. You never hear about mm-hmm. them. Once they're gone, they're gone. They don't give them a lot of publicity. And it's a very disturbing fact.
Mm-hmm. It is indeed. And you not only give lists, but you also
yeah,
give pictures
and identities of all these people.
Unbelievable.
A former cop has put together hundreds of case files regarding clusters of missing persons in national parks where the circumstances are flat out strange, but don't expect any answers from the Park Service.
At the end of the night, I was staying in a motel off the government or off the Park Service land and get a knock on the door.
The person who confided in law enforcement veteran David Politis was a government employee who told one heck of a story about people who vanish in national parks, places like Yosemite, but also national forests, including the Toyabe, west of Las Vegas. In the years since the knock at the door, Politis has scoured small-town newspaper archives and pestered federal agencies for records. He found so many cases of missing people that a planned book became two, filled with more than 400 cases of people who went into national parks but never came out.
People disappear in the wilds all the time, and we're talking about something different. These were unusual things that don't make sense, that happened to cluster together. cluster together in 3 to 4, sometimes as many as 20, 30 people missing at one location.
The individual cases are strange enough, Politis says, but stranger still were the reactions of federal agencies when he asked for public records.
And when we FOIA'd them, we got a response back that they don't keep any lists of missing people.
The response was not only no, but hell no, he says. So he began putting his own list together and discovered what appears to be nearly 30 clusters of disappearances in national parks and forests, cases which meet a narrow set of odd characteristics. The people who vanish often do so right under the noses of others, in many cases of kids, their parents' noses.
Being parents and being responsible people, we understand there's no way my son or daughter wouldn't know the way back from being just down the road getting the ball.
But it happens all the time.
It happens all the time.
The missing defy logic. They hike uphill, for instance, often steep climbs. Children as young as 2 or 3 are found a day or two later, many miles away and over mountain ranges.
Some kids are found in phenomenal distances away that would make no logical sense to any parent.
Weird things happen to their clothing. The missing often shed their clothes right away, even in bad weather. Clothes are found sometimes neatly folded, but not the people.
The ranger described to me, if you were standing straight up and you just had your shirt or just had your pants on and you melted directly into your pants, that's what it looked like to him. The pants were laying on the ground in a very neat pile.
The missing defy normal search and rescue practices. Bodies are found in places that are all but inaccessible, or they're found in the open, in areas that were repeatedly searched earlier. Bloodhounds or other tracker dogs are often befuddled.
If the dog can't find a scent, that's a red flag. If a dog, a canine dog, a trained dog, is put on the scent at the point last seen, and it lays down and it doesn't want to track anymore, red flag. And that happens more than you think.
Nevada doesn't have a major cluster, but it has plenty of cases. Children who vanished around Lake Tahoe, in the center of the state near Tonopah, and at Mount Charleston. In 1966, 6-year-old Larry Jeffrey of Henderson disappeared while playing with his 2 brothers, setting off a massive 16-day search by as many as 1,000 men. Former Sheriff Ralph Lamb remembers it clearly.
Walked away from camp. Never did hear from him, never did see him, never did find him. We had hundreds of people there working, almost shoulder to shoulder.
There's no large predators per se. So we can't worry about mammals taking him. And he was in a fairly remote area where there's no vehicular access, so there's no car abduction. This boy just walked into oblivion. And in an age where you have aircraft up looking for the boy, you have 800 people scouring the mountain,
you should be able to find him.
That coupled with, if he was deceased, part of that ongoing effort is bringing in cadaver dogs. The odor coming off the body, they should have found that. They didn't.
Other aspects of this mystery are even more bizarre, though difficult to explain in just a couple of minutes. Example, many of the vanished who are found alive are kids too young to speak or kids who can't communicate because of disabilities. Some who are found alive say they can't remember what happened to them. In his books, David Politis reports on why some obvious explanations simply don't apply here, but he stops short of giving his own theory or explanation.
I know you've been haunted by the case of 14-year-old Stacy and Aras or Aris. Can you explain?
Yeah, Stacy was 14 when she went on a horseback trip with her dad and 7 other people in the Sunrise Meadows area up in Yosemite. And what happened was is that her dad, her and this group of people all got on a horses and they rode for 6-7 miles into the backcountry. They stopped at a series of small cabins, and they all got out, and they went in and cleaned up. Stacy cleaned up, and she came out, and she told her dad that she was going to go outside and take some pictures with her camera. And there was a 71-year-old man that was on the trip that was sitting on a boulder about 100 feet away, and she told her dad, hey, I'm going to go sit with this man and take pictures of the view out over this lake. Her dad and everybody there saw her go walking over to this boulder with the man, take these pictures, and she told the man that she was going to walk down the hill 100 yards to the lake and take some pictures of the lake and be right back. And everyone saw her leave the man. The man continued sitting there. They're at about 9,000-10,000 feet in elevation. She walks down this boulder field into this tree-lined area around the lake, and that was the last time she was ever seen. She never came back. And there was an absolute massive, massive search for the girl. She actually lived in the community next to where I lived. At the time, I was living in Los Gatos, California. She lived in Saratoga. So this case was close, and it bothered me a lot. And the more you hear about this, the more it's going to bother you. So the search, all they found is they found the lens cap from her camera just inside the tree line from where she walked in to the area by the lake. And I spoke to her uncle, who went to the scene and assisted in the search, and said, "Hey, Dave, it was comprehensive. It was intense. It went on formally for 10 days, informally for 2 weeks. They brought in helicopters with forward-looking infrared radar. They brought in umpteen dozens and dozens of professional search and rescue people. They found nothing." He says, "The only thing we found was that lens cap. There were no other tracks. There was nothing. It's like she vanished." So there was essentially nothing about that case for 25, 30 years. I made a request on it through Yosemite for the Freedom of Information Act to get a copy of the report. A special agent for the Park Service named Yu, last name Y-U, called me and asked me why I wanted the report. And I explained that we were doing some research on search and rescue, and we specifically were looking into people who disappeared at Yosemite, and we wanted to see what in the report that was there. And he said there was nothing there. And I said, "Well, are there any suspects? Is it a criminal case?" He said, "Nope, it's a missing person case." I said, "Has anybody looked at it in the last 10 or 20 years? He says, "Not that I can think of." And I said, "So there's no suspects. There's no work done on the case. She hasn't been found." "Correct." I said, "Okay, well, could you send me a copy of the case?" He said, "Nope." I said, "Why not?" He says, "Because it's an open case and you'll never see it." I said, "But we've gotten dozens and dozens of missing persons cases from the Park Service. Why not this case?" He goes, you'll never see it." And we got off the phone. I went to my local congressman in Campbell. I appealed through him. His representative in Washington, D.C. met with a representative from the Department of the Interior, and I got an answer back saying they won't release the case. The family of Stacy got a hold of me. They publicly asked for the case. It was denied. They made an appeal through the Park Service so the family could read the case. And this is dragged on, I think, for 2 or 3 years, and they still haven't seen the case. So what happened to Stacy? Don't really know. But according to the Freedom of Information Act and what the law is intended to do is to give us access to information that our government has. This isn't a criminal case. There are no suspects. There's no crime that is thought to have occurred. Nobody can explain to me or that family why we can't see that case.
And in order for you to know, you know, the real story behind it, you need to know what happened. And that is exactly what you're trying to accomplish here. And isn't FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, isn't that our right as taxpaying citizens to obtain without being questioned?
And the amusing part about that is that when Obama came into office,
he talked
about a new phase of openness in our government. And honestly, I'm shocked that it's typical for the Park Service to refuse us. I'm shocked that they're refusing that family. People have asked me if I've ever had this silence around me before. And one time I was hunting with a friend who was in his 60s. And we were way up in the Northern California mountains in the middle of nowhere. And a beautiful day, wind was blowing a little bit, and we're walking together. And something struck me, and I stopped and I said, "Frank, you hear that?" And as quiet as this phone line is, that's how quiet it was. And we looked up to the top of this Douglas fir tree a couple hundred feet up, and the tree's blowing. There's no sound in the forest. There's no squirrels. There's no leaves rustling. And he went and he sat on the other side of the tree. I sat on the near side of the tree, kind of watching each other's backs. We sat there for 30 minutes. And then all of a sudden, the sound came back. And things, I can't explain this, but things felt normal again. But it was an abnormal sense. He said, he goes, Dave, I've been in the woods 55 years. I've never, ever felt or seen that happen before. And he goes, I can guarantee something was going on, but I don't know what it was. So people who have followed the books and followed my interviews, I don't discount anything, and I don't point a finger at anything.
That's right. Now, you've been extremely professional about this whole thing. It'd be very easy for you to go in one direction or another, but you will not do that.
And I could tell you that we've had probably 10 term paper length responses as to what's happening here. It's staggering what the amount of has been generated by people on this. And I think all the people are passionate. All of them are informed. And I think that we all go to that place in our mind that we know the most about. If you know the most about UFOs, maybe you go there. If there's another crypto topic, maybe you go there. And if you're a conspiracy believer and you think that the government might be taking us, maybe you go in that area.
And you got the satanic cult abductions as well. That's another one.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I think that it's hard to pin one culprit in these because they're so vast.
Remember when you ran away and I got on my knees and begged you not to leave because I go berserk? Well, you left me anyhow, and then the days got worse and worse, and now you see I've gone completely out of my mind. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha! You thought it was a joke, and so you laughed. You laughed when I had said that losing you would make me flip my lid. Right? You know you laughed. I heard you laugh. You laughed and laughed, and then you left. But now you know I'm utterly mad. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha. To the happy home with trees and flowers and chirping birds and basket weavers who sit and smile and twiddle their thumbs and toes, and they're coming to take me away. I cooked your food, I cleaned your house, and this is how you pay me back for all my kind, unselfish, loving deeds. Huh? Well, you just wait, they'll find you yet, and when they do, they'll put you in the ASPCA, you mangy mutt. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away.